Australia Focus.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter of this edition of Senior Focus. It's a beautiful day and I'm recording in a private home with lots of sunshine and fresh air, and still dreaming about the day when I'll be able to be in the new building in Mount Albert in the studio. Still hopeful that it will be before Christmas, and not holding my breath, she said with a chuckle. At this point in time, reflecting on the lead up to the council elections, I am really concerned about some of the issues for seniors that aren't perhaps being well aired or well discussed. So maybe further down the list after the budget concerns that have propped up in most of the discussions with the mayoral candidates, people concerned about the black hole in the budget, the number of businesses that have folded and that are not in a position to continue to pay rates and that sort of thing. Plus, the election campaign that's going along currently is throwing up issues about finances, budgets, black holes, and projects, whether projects should be started at all, whether they should be stopped, whether they should be prioritised in a new way. And these are the sort of headlines. But amongst all of that, the conversation has been about integrity and what people are bringing to the table in terms of people skills. Will somebody have the vision, be able to translate the vision for Auckland? Will somebody be able to bring consensus across a widely diverse community of councillors around the table, and so on? And which areas will have wins on the board in terms of which projects will get invested in and so on? I think there's some nail-biting going on in some parts of our region, particularly the Whangaparaoa Peninsula, where intensification is going to create massive demands for infrastructure that's not there, and the transport clogging of roads will bring the Penlink project up the list, because it will just be so inevitable that it will be so necessary. But every community could come up with its own list of must-haves, priorities and so on. Who will be listening? And who will get the ear of the decision makers? Who will coordinate around the council table and get the influence to bring about a change in priorities? These are the questions to look for in the future. But right now, we've got to wait and see what gets delivered, who actually gets voted for, and how the cookie crumbles. And at the moment, there are some train wrecks out there. There are some very precarious situations that some candidates find themselves in. There's been some unfortunate things that have happened to people. Never plain sailing in politics. But there does seem to be concern about what position will the panels have on the council's process. Will the voices of youth, the voices of the rainbow community, the voices of the seniors, the voices of the Pacific peoples and the ethnic peoples, will these voices actually be translated into understandable policy and actioned? Will these voices get incorporated? Or will, in fact, these panels get cut? Will they be part of the slash and burn process? So this is a really big area of concern, and we've noticed at some of the public meetings, some of the candidates support the current investment in having these representative groups that look at council policies, put their ruler over council policies, put their feedback into the pile. Will their voices be heard? Will they continue to exist? These are the questions, and these are questions to ask your councillors and your mayoral candidates when you're out on the campaign trail interviewing or talking to people, because it will take a certain amount of awareness and concern on the part of the population of Auckland, the residents of Auckland. That will have to be expressed. There will have to be interest in these panels. These panels will have to be seen to be vital channels as part of the consultative process of council to exist in the future. They could be axed in a very dramatic fashion or in a slow attrition, slowly phased out because they're not re-established, and could be done quietly. And that's the biggest fear, I think, that they'll just disappear in a late night meeting or something. That's how it's been, how things like that have happened in the past. So we need to make sure that the questions get asked, and they get asked publicly, and they get asked frequently at meetings. And this is a way to make sure that something like the seniors panel that was fought for it took about 2.5 terms of council to get the actual seniors panel into position, to get people selected and onto it, and to have the panel functioning. And it's in a term that I watched closely between 2016 and 2019, considerable policy was commented on. They provided great value for money because they tapped into not only academic wisdom, and not only research, and not only people that gave very valuable time to that process, but they were people who were alive and in the community and going to community meetings and listening with their ear to the ground. And so there were people who were able to translate and feed back into council grassroots concerns that were otherwise not really taken into consideration. So the process for the panel selection, have a good cross-section, both geographically, ethnically, age-wise, because, of course, just because you're over 65, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Socially, financially, gender-wise, ethically, and just in terms of life experience and lived concerns, there's a wealth of difference amongst the senior community. There are four different generations. I can think of people pursuing all kinds of ongoing career development in their older years, and I can think of people who are contributing greatly. And they're a real asset, and not to draw on their knowledge and skill and not to have them involved with council in this way would be a great loss. So just do some research yourself. Have a look at the seniors panel. Have a look at their reports online through the council documentation. You can actually find the work that's been done by these panels, by the way they've reported back to council what they've achieved. And I think you'd be very surprised. And ask the hard questions of your candidates that you meet. How much do they know about these panels, and how much are they aware of the process that the panels undergo, both in their selection and in their actual mahi with the council, their actual work and their frame of reference? That is, quite telling, because there will be councillors who have experience of the panels and have interacted with the panels, like Professor Collins, and there will be mayoral candidates who bring that experience to their role, but there will be many who don't, who've never, not aware of the existence of these panels even. So there's some homework for you all. Now, today I would like to focus on the things that concern those of us who have worked for 10 or more years around the age-friendly city concept, on recognising that we've got a rapidly growing ageing population, that one in four Aucklanders will be over 65 in the next 10 years. That fact is something that just needs to be reinforced to candidates right across the board, because it's something that a lot of people are just not aware of. They know a little bit about the silver tsunami. They know the retirement villages industry is interested in them. They know that real estate companies know about this ageing population shift demographically, but they're not really aware of the ramifications for what type of a city we should be aiming for, what's the vision for the city in terms of how do we incorporate that into public transport, accessibility of not only the transport but the actual outdoor environment, why we need those special beach mats for wheelchairs at the beach, and many, many other things. So this kind of whole area still requires a lot more discussion and awareness. It's something that even people who have been working on it for some time are continually surprised at the lack of awareness by the policy makers, by the decision makers, because, of course, many of these people are in their 30s and 40s and they don't have much to do with older people. They don't interact with them. They are unaware of their needs generally. They don't see the movement that's going on in the society. Yes, we've had the Me Too movement. We've had the issues of racism and post-George Floyd, and these isms have been well-aired in the media. But ageism is very pervasive, alive and well, and very underreported. And it's often the underlying theme in a lot of experiences that seniors have that get written up in the media. But the actual prejudice against them is not understood. And that's what's underlying elder abuse. And we need to make sure that whatever changes come into local government, whatever changes come into the governance of Auckland, that we don't go backwards, that we don't in fact lose ground, that we don't lose sight of a vision that people had when they first started working to get a seniors panel at the Super City around the table and make sure seniors' needs and rights were considered and policies reflected those things. So I'm going to take a breather, and I think it's time to have a bit of sparkling music. We can toe-tap, we can sit in our chair and move our arms, and we can get up and dance, and we can make sure that we're exercising, enjoying ourselves for the next few minutes. So I've chosen Brett McKenzie's If You Want to Go. So let's go.
If you want to go, baby, then you should go. waiting for you. Hell no. After all we've been through, don't try to fake it, darling, hit me, I'll take it. You and Jeffrey start on a new. If our love story is done, why keep pretending, darling, I need an ending? Out of the way I'm gonna lose. You wanna roll, baby, yeah, with you. Yeah, that's how you feel, I'm gonna hit that road. You wanna roll, baby, yeah, with you.
Welcome back, everyone. And I'm Anne-Marie Currie. Today I'm talking about the upcoming council elections, but I'm also, this is a chat show, so it's a bit of a potpourri, and I'm also reflecting on some of the conversations that I've been having in the community across the region, as well as the recent Writers Festival I attended, because that's a rich source of inspiration for me once a year, and I always find interesting people to then interview on air subsequently. It's a great source of richness for me in terms of not only just touching base with visionaries and people who have insights into changes that are going on in society, but also great books that I want to then dip into and study further, and also just reflections on what's possible, what's creatively coming out of the woodwork that hasn't been thought about before. Because there's just so many vibrant people and so many people with rich ideas that are just in the mix at all the different workshops and presentations and events that go on during those many days of the week of the festival. This time, I thought of note that some of the three events were the most significant for me. The ones that Moana Maniapoto brought together as a series about the visionaries, the opportunities or threats that are presented in the document He Puapua. The Navigator, the series about Dr. Moana Jackson and his extraordinary contribution to our society in terms of furthering the understanding of how Māori and Pākehā can work together in Aotearoa, and also the ongoing conversation about the role of education in society in terms of illuminating the challenge of the future of how we're going to transform society to deliver more equitable outcomes. And again, Moana Maniapoto really just unfolded the most amazing interview with Dr. Linda Tuhiwai Smith, because it seems to encapsulate for me just so much of the creative conversations that I have heard in the last 18 months, and it just seemed to bring the essence of the changes that are going on in the flourishing of the Māori society in terms of creativity, in terms of development, in terms of future flourishing of Māori communities up and down the country. This wonderful conversation on stage just so illuminating. I can remember distinctly when Linda Tuhiwai Smith talked about the impact of education. She reflected on her parents taking her to the United States and how she was there at the height of the civil rights debacle and the killing of Martin Luther King, and she went to school in a system where she didn't really fit in, because she didn't fit in with blacks and she didn't fit in with the white middle class, and it was easier to hang out with the white trash trailer kids than anyone else. But just the richness of that education process of being taught to question and being taught to debate things that weren't quite normal in Kiwi society at that time. I think that foundational process that set her up for the rest of her academic career was so obviously so seminal. But at the same time, she was able to say, right now, we are facing decision makers without visionary perspective because of the education system, because we have had a neoliberal impact of the system on young minds, and people who are self-absorbed have come out of the product of that system. They've come out so self-absorbed, so narcissistic, they actually don't have a visionary concern to be inclusive and to actually pick up the narrative of the racist changes to remove some of the worst impacts of racism, the changes to remove some of the worst impacts of sexism, the changes to remove some of the worst aspects of ageism. They haven't been affected by that because their education hasn't groomed them for those issues. And I think there was almost a standing applause when she talked about how these people dominate the narrative in Parliament and the concerns and how limited their vision is and what a set of barriers that presents to us in terms of getting the changes that we need for communities to flourish and for people to be able to transform from whatever misfortunes they've been subjected to. On the note of the Writers' Festival, I would just like to recommend that there are one or two books that stood out for me, and one is Charlotte Grimshaw's The Mirror book, which is a memoirs book. And if you're into memoirs, it's a really interesting book because you can pick it up and read a chapter and put it down and maybe go back to it even in 3 or 4 weeks and pick up another chapter. It's possible to not read it cover to cover, but to dip in and out as your life permits. So if you're someone who's short on time, I recommend Charlotte Grimshaw's The Mirror Book because it's deep writing. It encourages deep reflection, but it's also able to be taken in small bite-sized chunks. There were many events that I didn't get to that I wish I could have got to, and I'm going to be looking at Radio New Zealand's program quite closely over the next few months, because quite often some of these events have been in fact recorded and they are turned into a very good radio program. So watch out for these, because there will be opportunities to pick up on some of the really good interviews and some of the really good events that were on that you might not have got to. Another thing that struck me, though, was how many people had something to say about the structure of governance in our country, whether it was the poets, whether it was the lawyers, whether it was the writers of fiction, whether it was the people who were doing stories for children. It seemed to be that governance and where does equity fit into how we're governed was a sort of theme that ran through many of the events and many of the books for many of the discussions that were going on, because I think this is a fundamental part of who are we. It's not a matter of just celebrating that, well, we've got our own history and our own ethnic background and our own links to our own ancestors and our own ancestor stories, and these are all important. It wasn't just that, because we've done a lot of that in the past. And I think we're aware enough as a society now that it's even fashionable to have ancestors that are not colonists that you can bring out of the cupboard and talk about. But no, I'm not talking about that. I'm actually talking about the way we are governed, the processes of government, the way in which people's voices get woven into the narrative, the way in which they are woven into at the decision-making table, into having some kind of meaningful part of the process, so they're not left out. And I think we're at the stage where we're trying to be incorporative these different views in terms of electing more diverse representatives in our electoral system at the parliamentary level and at the council level. So we have more diversity around the table, and we get more diverse voices being heard. But I think we actually have to go a step further. We actually have to look at what the processes are, how they're done, whether people feel comfortable or they feel there's tokenism happening, or where they feel that there are enough to sort an attack on. So there's a lot of issues still to be ironed out. And it's a case of watch the space. It's also a case of all of us needing to be not treading on eggshells, but we need to have a keen sense of listening with the heart, listening with compassion, listening with the extra set of ears that would enable us to pick up the undercurrents of what is suggested but not seen directly. I think this is the step that we have to go through in the future. And it's not a matter of taking everybody preciously and singing Kumbaya. It's more a sense of, let's be robust about this and let's be direct. And let's actually put the real stuff out on the table for discussion and debate, rather than sort of having to process it in advance before we actually get to the debate. Yeah. And I think we will see quite a lot of transformative change in the next 5 to 10 years, and we'll have a different society as a result of this. So no matter what happens in terms of climate change, no matter how many disasters get thrown up, and no matter how many setbacks we have with our economy and with world peace and other big threats to our well-being, no matter what, I do think that we are challenged to be stepping up to being more diverse in how we and who's around us and who makes decisions and how we get there. And so I do think that seniors have a role to play in this, that we have a role to keep alive stories and heritage, but we also have a role to be genuine, to be real, and to have a touchstone about our history and where we've come from. And I think that it's important that seniors' voices are heard, and that they are in the mix. And I want to keep that concept alive. That's the purpose of this station. So thank you for listening, and I encourage you to stay with us as we move through the election period.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.